Hey, you guys, Flickers of Fear time once again, where we're doing a movie review. Forgive me if my voice sounds a little bit funny. I have a little bit of a cold, so, I'm just going to try and power through it. It's not that bad, but yeah, it is making my voice sound a little bit funny. So, if you guys will remember, not too long ago, Tom and I saw the 2022 reboot of Firestarter. And as I mentioned, I think when we talked about that movie, like, we didn't love it, but it was like, it was okay. It was pretty good. But I remembered that this was actually only the second feature film directed by Keith Thomas. And I also happened to remember that Keith Thomas had made his feature film debut back in 2019 with a movie called The Vigil, which actually premiered at that year's Toronto Film Festival. And actually, there was a little bit of a buzz about it because I remember seeing a lot of videos like reviewing it, on the horror channels I watch and stuff like that. And I'd kind of like forgot that it existed until Firestarter came out and people started like referring to it. So I was actually curious to see what Keith Thomas had done with a movie that he both wrote and directed, like, rather than it being an adaptation of someone else's work. So I noticed that the movie was on Hulu, so I went ahead and fired it up and gave it a watch. Now, I will say the premise of this movie is not all that original. It's pretty much like a haunted house or a demon, not necessarily demon possession, but a demon type of story. But it does have kind of a unique angle in that the story is set kind of within the Orthodox Jewish community and sort of relies on that mythology for the story. The movie overall, very, very nicely shot, very atmospheric, has some really effective, creepy images and scenes in it. It's a little slow. It's almost entirely set in one house, which, like I said, probably like budget constraint, but I don't mind that. I don't mind like a movie that's just set in one location because I know that it is a lot cheaper and it can be done really well, which I think it is here. I will say it relies a little bit too much on jump scares, but overall, a pretty solid little horror movie. If you're looking for something kind of like creepy in the lower budget Blumhouse sort of thing, but with like a little bit of, like I said, like a slow arty kind of thing to it. So what you have, the actor Dave Davis plays a character named Yakov Ronin. Now, he is a young man in Brooklyn, and he's grown up apparently his entire life in New York City's Orthodox Jewish community. Now, after a tragedy that you don't find out, like, what exactly it was, like, what the details were until later, the audience learns that Yakov has recently left this community. Now, you're led to believe that I guess he still, retains his faith, presumably, and he's still, it's not like he's shunned or anything like that. Like, he still lives in the area, he still seems to maintain contact with friends and family members, things like that, but has just apparently decided this whole Orthodox thing isn't for him anymore. So at the beginning, we see him in this course, kind of like, I'm led to believe it's like a support group for other people that grew up in Orthodox Judaism, and now they're kind of getting out of it, and how they're going to like adapt to, the secular world or the world at large, which apparently is like very difficult for them. So it's really clear that Yakov in particular is struggling. I'm assuming, I don't know a great deal about the Orthodox Jewish community, but they seem... just from this movie, it seems that Yakov is very sheltered and he doesn't really know how to write a resume. Also, like, he's saying, oh, I wrote it by hand and like handed it to the guy at the interview. And it's like, obviously that didn't go too well. He doesn't really know how to interview for a job. He doesn't really know how to like talk to women or be social or anything like that. And it appears, the implication being, that he's only recently learned to use a smartphone. Like, he's very excited about, ooh, my favorite part, it's the flashlight, you know what I mean? So because of these difficulties, he's having some money problems, unsurprisingly. Now, on his way out of the meeting, we see somebody is there, like, waiting for him. So he runs into this guy, which is either, I don't know if it's a friend or a relative. I saw one review that said it was his cousin, but I don't remember if he says in the movie that he's related to him or if it was just, like, a guy he knew from before. But this guy is named Reb Shulam, and he's still a member of the Orthodox community. Now, he knows that Yakov is hurting for cash, and he's like, look, I got a proposition for you, like, tonight. There's a local guy named Reuben Litvak, and he's a Holocaust survivor. He died today. And someone needs to be what they call, I guess it's either Schomer or Schoimer. I couldn't tell how they were like pronouncing it. This is a person that, in general, it's somebody that's like supposed to watch over something, like no matter what it is. But in this context, it's somebody who essentially sits in vigil over the dead body until the mortuary attendants come to get it. So you're led to believe that it's kind of like protecting the body from something, protecting the soul, whatever it is. They kind of like get into it a little bit, but there has to be somebody sitting there. Now, there's actually kind of like a little bit of text at the beginning of the movie that explains that usually the person, you know, sitting in vigil over the body would be a family member, you would imagine. But they said sometimes when that's not possible, like the family members or friends are not available, then it's perfectly cromulent, it's perfectly fine to hire somebody to do it, and indeed it's quite common for that to happen. So this is essentially what Reb Shulam wants Yaakov to do. He says, I'll pay you for, well, at first he offers 200, but the Yaakov is like, no, 500. And he's like, okay, 400. So he's like, I'll give you $400. All you have to do is sit at the Litvak house and watch over the corpse until dawn, which is at this point is about 5 hours away, because it's like almost midnight or something. He says, now Reb Shulam says, the first Schoimer I hired took off because he was afraid, although that's, he didn't say what he was afraid of, and that's like he doesn't really elaborate on it. Reb also says that Mr. Litvak, he's like, his wife is in the house and she's still alive, but she has dementia and she kind of goes in and out, so she's not real up to like sitting the vigil, so they needed somebody else to do it. So Yaakov kind of is kind of reluctant about this, but he has done it before, and he's like, well, I do really need the money, so it doesn't really take too much coaxing to talk him into it. Now, Reb Shulam, and we're led to believe that this isn't the first time this happens, then tries to convince Yaakov, hey, after you're done doing that, like, why don't you come to morning prayers with me, like, on the following morning? Like, low-key trying to get him back in the fold. He's not obnoxious about it, to be fair, but he's just kind of like, look, I respect your decision, but why don't you just come with me? Come on, it'll be fine. You'll see everybody and stuff. But Yaakov is like, yeah, no, I'm not having that. But to his credit, like, Reb Shulam's like, okay, fair enough. They're, like I said, they're not obnoxious about it or anything like that. He's just kind of like, oh, come, you know, come to synagogue with me. And he's just like, no, I don't really want to do that. So the rest of the movie takes place inside the Latvik's house, which is like a spooky old house, you know, standard issue. And the body of Ruben Latvik is lying under a sheet, like in the front parlor, like in front of the front windows. So as the hours kind of creep by, the 5 hours that that Yaakov is in this house, you kind of have these, you know, it was horror movie sort of like shenanigans starting to ramp up, in the sense that Yaakov starts hearing like weird noises upstairs, like somebody walking around that is maybe too big to be the little old lady that's up there. He actually looks over into the dining room, which is all really dark. And he thinks he sees like this shadowy figure over there in the corner. And then he shines the flashlight on his phone that he loves so much over there. And there's nothing there. So there's that. And then he starts here, like his hands start, like his joints start cracking really weird. Like almost like he has like arthritis or something like that. So he hears these weird cracking noises, which comes into play later on. So there's that. And then, you know, as time goes on and on, like the phenomena just like escalates into the point where he's kind of having what could be like full bore like hallucinations, being like, there's one really gross one that involves a toenail, which I won't really go into. There's one where he's like drinking some water out of a glass, and there's like it seems like it turns into hair or something like that that he's the pulls out of his mouth. There's one really, really eerie one where he's kind of like on his phone, even though I think technically from an Orthodox standpoint you're supposed to just like sit in vigil and not, you know, look on your phone or not do any like technology type stuff, but he's just like doing it anyway and nobody seems all that bothered about it. But he's on the phone kind of like texting this young woman that he's sort of interested in from his support group, and he gets a video like from an unknown number, and I'm not gonna say what's on the video, but it's like, it's pretty creepy. It's like, it's low key, but it's like pretty creepy like the way it's done. So yeah, so that's pretty spooky. Now, the movie does actually introduce a little bit of ambiguity, in the sense that there's one scene where Yaakov is calling his doctor, And he's talking about the medication. I think he says he's on Ativan. And saying, well, I, you know, it's getting bad, but I don't think that I'll have to go back to the hospital. So, you know, implying that, you know, he had some, like, a nervous breakdown or something like that before. So it's also kind of like showing the audience, well, is the stuff that he's seeing, is that really real? Or is it just, like, a product of, like, his past trauma? Which actually you do find out what that is, like, through kind of nightmares that he has and flashbacks that he has, which kind of involves sort of the sort of horrific death of a family member of his that he actually feels responsible for or guilty about. But, okay, so there's that. But, like, the upshot of all this, though, is that you find out that the dead guy, Ruben Latvik, who was a good guy, he wasn't, like, evil or nothing like that, but he was plagued throughout his life by a demon, essentially, of Jewish folklore, which is called a mazik. Now, this thing, Mrs. Latvik, like, tells Yakov about it later on. This demon apparently, like, attaches itself to people that are in great distress or great psychological pain and, like, feeds off of them. And now that Reuben has died, the mazik is looking for a new host. And since Yakov has been in the house and the demon is apparently floating around in the house, like, looking for another one, and because Yakov has this terrible trauma, like, in his recent past and is, you know, kind of having a hard time getting his shit together, the mazik is going to be, like, latching onto him and basically will never leave him alone, will, like, dog him his entire life, unless there's a specific thing that you have to do, like, to get rid of it. I don't think you can kill it, but, like, you can get it off you, essentially. I will say, too, that the way the demon looks is super cool. I really do like, it's, like, really fucking creepy. Like, he has, like, these really big, like, creepy hands, which are kind of cool, but I like the whole conceit, and this is maybe a little bit of a spoiler alert, but the whole conceit of him, his head being on backwards, I thought was, like, really, really cool. I really like that. It was, like, really, really unsettling, like, the look of it. Now, as I mentioned, the vigil, it's not breaking any new ground in terms of the supernatural horror genre or the demon possession or haunted house genre. But I will say that it's pretty refreshing to see, like, a demon possession style movie that isn't based around Catholicism for a change. And I can't really think of that many other horror films that deal with Orthodox Jewish folklore in the way that this one does. I mean, really, I looked on Wikipedia, and there's some, I mean, they just listed films that were about, you know, Orthodox Jewish community, but a lot of them weren't horror movies. So this is really kind of like a refreshing spin on it. You know, it's kind of cool to see a different spin on, you know, what's essentially kind of like a formula type of horror movie. So the movie isn't, like, reinventing the wheel or anything like that. It does succumb to a few kind of cliche horror tropes at some time, like a little bit, like I said, over-reliance on jump scares or musical stings or things like that. Like, you know, a lot of Blumhouse movies do that. Because that's, I think this is IFC Midnight distributed this, but I think Blumhouse was had something to do with it as well. But overall, this was, like, a pretty decent watch, had some pretty effective creepy atmosphere and some, like, really cool, like, spooky imagery that I was kind of into. And like I said, it's kind of nice to see a different take on sort of the same old, same old. And I kind of like haunted house movies and movies like this. So yeah, it was a perfectly solid movie. Definitely worth watching if you're into that kind of thing. So, you know, it's on Hulu at the moment. I'm sure it's probably streaming other places as well. So let me know if you've seen it or what you thought about it in the comments. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.